Hey everybody, I'm Dr. Deb, and welcome to another episode of PTSD and Beyond. Stories. Storytelling. Throughout the ages of time, stories have captured our attention. We have found ourselves and find ourselves listening, relating, and connecting to the story as well as to the person of the story. Having thoughts of, I'm not alone. You are not alone. We are in this thing called life together. Hey everybody, this is Dr. Deb Lind and welcome to the PTSD and Beyond podcast. Every week we bring amazing guests, whether they're subject matter experts, inspiring souls, forward thinkers, or perhaps even wounded healers. In June is PTSD Awareness Month. And here at PTSD and Beyond, we've been working on something pretty special for you. Something that you can listen to each and every day. Each day in the month of June, we'll be sharing the unique story of someone with lived experience with trauma and PTSD. We'll learn a little bit about their journey, how they're progressing through a healing journey, as well as hear their post-traumatic growth and how they've found meaning, purpose, and a superpower in the process of healing. We got to let you guys know that we are extremely grateful for all the folks that have shown tremendous courage to come on the podcast and share their stories and inspire everyone to listen to this podcast around the globe. We've had folks from England, Canada, New Zealand, India, Malaysia, Australia, the United States, and beyond. We felt that there was no better way to honor PTSD Awareness Month and to share the stories of our brothers and sisters from around the world and acknowledging their trauma, their challenges with PTSD, but also to teach us and to inspire us, allowing us a glimpse of their healing journey. We here at PTSD and Beyond hope that these stories will touch your heart and touch your soul and offer you inspiration and compassion for others suffering from PTSD, from folks that are affected by PTSD, as well as yourself. These are the powerful lived experience stories of real people. They are the champions who keep striving, who keep healing, who keep growing, and who keep living. We hope that you enjoy the PTSD and Beyond 30 Stories in 30 Days, honoring PTSD Awareness Month. Remember to please share these episodes with folks that you feel and you know will benefit. Remember to subscribe, like, and share. So let's give a listen to today's guests. 30 Stories in 30 Days starts now. Hey everybody, it's Dr. Deb here with PTSD and Beyond, and we're doing our story sharing segment today, and I want to welcome Justin Bryan to the show. Justin, welcome to PTSD and Beyond.
Hey, Dr. Deb, thanks for having me on.
For sure, for sure. We talk about the power of story sharing and how it resonates with people, and it can even list, someone who's listening right now can even take action based on hearing someone's story. So for our segment today, could you share with us a little bit about Justin and your story?
Yeah, absolutely. I do believe in the power of sharing your story. Actually, that's one of the biggest contributing factors. What helped me was reaching out, listening to podcasts about guys that kind of struggled the same as I did, or people, regardless, and taking what they did and implementing it into my own life. So that's listening to other people's stories actually helped me probably almost the most. But I grew up a pretty, which what I thought was a happy kid. However, what I didn't realize is that I battled with mental health from a kid. Now, looking back on what I've been diagnosed with, I battled with my mental health, self-worth, and confidence since I was a little kid. And that ultimately led into a fight with addiction for 16 years and being suicidal for six of them. Now, growing up, I always wanted to be somebody else. I didn't want to be me. I wanted to be, I was a smaller kid. Now I'm about 6'3", 240, but I work out a lot, but it took a lot to get there. But I was always the small one. I was always the, you know, the weaker one. I always looked at other people and wanted to be them. And after I got out of high school, I didn't start drinking until about 19 years old. But once I drank, the confidence, the false confidence that it gave me, it made me feel good about myself. So then when I first started drinking, I kind of went from not an alcoholic to an alcoholic really quick. So I actually moved away for hockey. And when I was away, I started partying a lot. And then once hockey was done, I actually moved to Vancouver and I became a bartender down there. And that's when I really started to party. So when I hit about 24 years old, I did drugs for the first time. Now, when I would go out, I would have an algorithm of how many drinks I would have before I went out, before I left my house. Mm-hmm. I'd have so many drinks when I was at the nightclub so I could talk to a girl, so I could go on the dance floor. And then finally, at 24 years old, I tried drugs for the first time. And unfortunately, what my buddy told me was like, "Hey, man, you were really funny last night." Basically, that was the worst thing he could have told me, because as soon as it clicked, oh, I was funny. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now if I'm feeling bad, I can have some alcohol. Now if I'm feeling bad, I can have some drugs. Mm-hmm. So I mixed the two. And then I was walking home from work one time and I started to look up and I'm like, "Oh, cow, am I an alcoholic?" And I'm like, "No, I'm not an alcoholic." And this, about 6 months earlier from that, I was having a conversation with my buddy. We were talking about depression, and that's the first time I looked at him and I said, I'm like, "You know what? Depression is an excuse. It's for the weak. You need to man up." And that's when I started. I lived by that man up stigma for so long. So at 24 years old, I'm thinking that depression's not real. Mm-hmm. I'm clearly a full blown alcoholic and becoming a drug addict. But I was correlating alcoholism with being a lowlife or being homeless. That's how I looked at it. Mm-hmm. The wrong way to look at it. So 24, I'm looking at my biggest hurdles in life as they don't matter. That's not me. And what I realized later though, is that that man up stigma that almost ended up taking my life, because I ended up getting so depressed, not knowing what it was, that I would talk to myself and my internal dialogue would be brutal. I would be telling myself, "Hey, you're a loser. Don't be weak. You need to man up. You're a failure. Look at all these people are doing it. Why can't you do it?" So I moved away from Vancouver and then my drinking just started to escalate up. And finally at 28, after I kept losing jobs, I moved back home and I tried to get help. But the thing was, is that I didn't really want it for myself. So I would go to my appointments. I would sometimes take medications, but if I felt better, I always said, "I don't want to be a pill popper." Mm-hmm. And it's because I'm like, I just don't want another drug in my body, which, you know what? I was on meds for a very long time. I'm not on them anymore. However, they did help me. Mm-hmm. Once I accepted them, they did play a big part in my role in my recovery. And if I ever felt like I was slipping back down again, I would take them. But when I moved home, I was trying to get help and I was going back to work, but then I started to become very suicidal because I was very hard on myself. And for six straight years, I would just keep thinking, "Is today going to be the day? How am I going to do it?" Mm-hmm. And what I didn't know is that, my ex came to me and said, "Hey, listen, I'm pregnant." So we were broken up and then we ended up getting together and she became pregnant. And right after that, I ended up crashing a car when I was drinking. And I said, "Enough is enough. I'm going to rehab." However, because I wanted to come out, I want to be a good father for this kid. So I was going to rehab and I'd get out with about a month left of maybe it'd be 2 or 3 weeks left before he was born, but I went with the wrong mindset. So I went with, "I got to get out of town. I'm scared. I'm leaving. So I went to rehab with 60 other men. It's a very different experience. You got a lot of guys in there. Where you take away all their coping mechanisms. Mm-hmm. You put them in a house. They're angry. They feel guilty. They're shameful. They're depressed. A lot of them, some of them out of jail. Some of them have been like abused as kids. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of feelings. So I went there, and you're there, you're counseling throughout the day. But you build some good friendships. But I went there and I ate, I worked out. I wasn't present. And as soon as I got out, my uncle came and picked me up, and I looked at him like, I'm not done drinking forever. So that's the first thing I said to him as soon as I got out of rehab.
Wow.
So my son is born, and about 3 months after that, one of the hardest things I ever learned to do was how to live sober. So what I tell people is that you don't choose addiction. However, you choose to stay in addiction. Mm-hmm. Hardest part of addiction isn't quitting drinking, but it's living in sobriety.
Right.
So for me, I could quit drinking for a month, 2 months, 3 months, but it was learning how to live life sober, learning how to actually go play hockey sober, because I'd use alcohol for everything, having conversations sober. So 3 months after he was born, I started drinking again. And then eventually my girlfriend had to make the tough choice that she's like, okay, I got to leave because this isn't an environment that I want her son to be around. So 6 months into my kid's life, she picked up and she left.
Wow. So there's a lot of nuggets here about how, trauma and addiction has affected your life. If you were to, reflect back, what are ways that you've grown? I mean, so when we look at, like, I just want to summarize real quickly here to make sure that, the listeners are like going, yep, I got it. That they, we all understand. So the ways that, things have affected your life and affected you physically, mentally, emotionally, relationship wise, it affected your overall complete life, and that itself is a struggle. It's like what I'm seeing is like, you think that you're down and you wonder like how much further down can I get before I actually get back up, and looking at you and hearing your story, we, the listeners, like, you can't see Justin, but he's gotten back up. And when you hear about ways and how he's gotten back up, I think you're going to be like totally blown away. Talk with us about how you've grown from this.
Well, it was a journey, and it was a hard journey, but it was worth it. So after she left, I went back down and I just kept sliding. I took a couple of leaves of absence from work. I was lucky I never hurt somebody, because at that time I was working at a mill and I was working with heavy equipment, and my mind, I wasn't there. Sometimes I forget people's names in front of me. And I would just keep thinking, oh my God, how does he keep it together? How does he keep it together? And so I wasn't present. So I was lucky I never hurt anybody. And to finally, I would be drinking and I'd miss work. Finally, I was like, hey, you need to take a break. So I took another break, and I was like, I was working out at the time, and unbeknownst to me, I was listening to motivational speaking on YouTube, and I was listening to these four guys that I had no idea who they were. I definitely know who they are now, but Inky Johnson, Les Brown, Trent Shelton, and Eric Thomas. And these guys started talking about your why. So I started asking myself, well, what is my why? So one time I had my son, it was just me and him. I think he was about 2 years old, and I couldn't keep my thoughts together. And so I didn't know what to do. And he's 2 years old. He wants to play with you. He wants to have some fun. But my mind was racing. So I took him to the store and I grabbed some candy and a bag of chips. And then we got back home and I put him in front of the TV and turned on a movie so I could distract him. So I went behind him and while he was watching that movie, and I started staring at him, and I started looking at the back of his head. I started crying, and I was like, am I going to make it? Am I going to make it to teach him how to ride a bike, see him score his first goal, to graduate, to see him get married? And you think, when I talk about finding your why, you think I could just use that kid as my why. But then at another time, I drank too much, ended up in the hospital with IVs. His mom brought him there. He looked at me, looked at his mom, and he's like, "Dad, mommy, what's wrong with daddy?" And what I say, it was hard for me to find my wife because I looked at him and I'm like, he deserves a better father. So I was in the mindset where he deserves someone better than me. As a healthy father, a father that's going to be there for him every day to teach him the way of life. But luckily I was listening to those guys and I started, okay, Justin, what's your why? What's your why? Well, what if my why is that little boy? So what if I get better for him? I know I'm a good person. I know I have a big heart. I know my possibilities and my capabilities. One thing that really hurt me the most is that I knew I was better than what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And every addict, well, I can't say for every addict. I think most of them, they know they're better than that.
Yep.
But it's hard to get out of that lifestyle. So I decided, okay, if I get better for him, I can raise him. I can be the dad that he needs. But if I get better for him, I get better for me. If right. I get better for me, I can help other people. So I said, okay, let's go back to rehab. So I'm back to rehab with my why. And then instead of, okay, quit drinking, Justin, I'm like, okay, well, why do I drink? Well, I'm depressed. Why am I depressed? Because I have low self-confidence and low self-worth. Well, why do you feel like that? Well, because I compared myself and I didn't know about mental health. Mm-hmm. I didn't have healthy coping mechanisms. So then I went back to rehab. I went to all the classes. We learned about gratitude and mindfulness and guilt and shame. Brene Brown.
Yeah.
We watched the movie Peaceful Warrior. And you know what? It's dealing acceptance and forgiveness. And that's one of the biggest things I learned. So I learned about acceptance and forgiveness in rehab. And then I actually learned about acceptance and coaching. And it's acceptance, forgiveness, it's all for you. Like, don't mistake it. It doesn't need to be for the other person.
Yep.
But what you do is you accept that, hey, this situation, event, or person is real.
Mm-hmm.
It happened. You can delete it. It's in your life. But you got to forgive them. You don't have to forgive them for their face. But you got to forgive them so you can move on. So you can stop living in your past and create your future.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple of things I had to forget, but mainly the biggest one was me.
Yeah.
But on my road to recovery, I've been to over 100 doctor's appointments. I spent 77 days in rehab. I've been to 45 addiction appointments, 10 psychologists, 10 psychiatrists, 8 different medications. But I found that one why. And that's what really helped. Unfortunately, I got out of rehab. I had everything going. 3 months later, I slipped up again. And my thoughts started to get dark, really dark. And then finally on January 4th, 2019, I told my mom, listen, I need to go to the hospital. She took me to the hospital and I was the first day that I said out loud that I had a plan and that plan was to end it. And since then my dad was there, my mom was there, a counselor was there. And that was the day that I turned it around. I said, enough is enough. I need to do this. And I started doing the gratitude, healthy diet, exercise, podcast, journaling, reading. I committed to my appointments. I committed to my medications. I built a support network of doctors and counselors and friends.
Yeah.
You know, the support network of people that are going to build you up, support you.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing is to, when you find that friend that can talk to you, don't be dismayed if not everybody wants to talk to you about mental health.
Right.
It makes a lot of people uncomfortable. In the beginning, I was like, why doesn't this guy want to talk to me? He's my good friend. It just, you know what? They're not comfortable with that. So find that one friend that you can talk sports, talk business, yep. Family, right. Or talk mental health.
So out of all of this, and I say this meaning experience, story, wisdom, knowledge, connection, reflection, humility, right? Because it's humbling when we see ourselves and then we say, oh, you know what? Okay, we're gonna do something about these things. There's always even an additional layer of growth. I call it a superpower. So Justin, what's your superpower?
You know what? That's a good question. I think it's the ability to have people trust me. I've had all sorts of people open up to me, just reach out to me and talk to me and tell me that, hey, here, just, I can talk to you. I feel comfortable. I trust you. And that makes me feel like, it makes me feel good. I think a lot of it has to be the relatability factor. It's, you know what? showing that who I really was. So taking off that mask that I was wearing. And showing the people who I really was. Like I spoke at World Suicide Prevention Day on September 19th, 2019 and September 10th, sorry. And it was my turn to speak. And I was like, okay, so this is going to be the first time that I'm actually going to say it in front of a crowd of 150 people. I'm just reading off a script, right? Cause I worked with Canadian Mental Health on that. And so I sat there, I'm like, they handed me the mic and I'm like, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry. Yeah. Don't cry, don't cry, don't cry. Oh my God, I'm going to cry. And then I spoke, but after I walked away, I started crying and it was tears of joy, like relief. Like mm-hmm. I took that persona that I looked like a friend told me I should be a personal trainer, but I was like, no, I'm going to school to be a coach and a speaker. And this is why. And I took the mask off. And then finally I was hesitant, but I put it on social media the next day. And you know, if it's Facebook official relationships, it's official if it's Facebook, right? Mm-hmm. But I put it on social media and the overwhelming support I got mm-hmm. of people pouring out, opening up, saying good for you. And it's just people, I think my superpower is people being able to be vulnerable with me.
That's amazing. I love that. There's so many quotes that you have here. And we're going to have some of that information on your summary. So let's talk about real quickly, let's give a plug to your coaching. What do you got going here? Tell us what it is. And we'll get to the last question because I know there's always a person who's like, but wait a second, I got a question here. So give a plug and a shout out to your coaching business. What's it called?
So it's Justin Bryan Coaching. It's called the Stronger You Project. So what you do is reach out. We have a transformation calls, see if we're a good fit to work together, see what you're really looking for. So it's not like your typical coaching thing. It's more of, hey, we're going to work on your self-limiting beliefs. We're going to work on your roadblocks, your healthy boundaries, your procrastination, the acceptance part, your mindset, finding your why. I actually have 17 modules that we can pick 12 of them and work within those 12 weeks. We work one-on-one. I have an accountability sheet that's where, hey, listen, you know what? You have to grade yourself for how you think you showed up this week. Mm-hmm. Reach out to me at any time for questions. I check in with you to see how you're doing. And we get down to the nitty gritty of, you know, what's underneath that rock? What do we need to have to lift open and see what's under there that you need to, or that you want? Because you got to turn those needs into wants. I want them. It's a lot easier to do when you say, I want to do it instead of I need to do it.
Right. That is so true. I love that. I love what you just said here. It is, let's look and see what's under that rock. So for the person that's listening, that's saying, you know what? All right. You know, Justin's story is really touching me here. It sounds a lot like mine, or it, you know what? There's just something about the way that you're saying it. What would be the last thing that you would say, you know, to the person that's listening that just wants another nugget of something? What is it like you met them? And what would be the thing that you would say to the person that's listening right now?
Oh, geez. You got to love you for you. You spend the most time with yourself in life. So what you say to yourself when you're by yourself can either make or break you. Reaching out for help is a sign of strength, not weakness. And you got to find that why. Because you know what? Like a lot of people like me, we can't. I know they say do it for yourself, do it for yourself. I couldn't. And I'm okay with that. But I found a reason to do it. And that was for him, which I did it for him, now, which came back on me. So who was I really doing it for?
Mm-hmm. I love that. Guys, this is a wonderful quote right here. You got to love you for you. Justin, thank you so much for being on PTSD and Beyond and sharing your story with us today.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure, Dr. Deb.
All right, you guys, this is Dr. Deb with PTSD and Beyond. Remember to show up again tomorrow because we've got another story and we will see everybody then. All right, make it a good day.
We hope you enjoyed today's guest and their story on 30 stories in 30 days on the PTSD and Beyond podcast. Remember to hit that subscribe button as well as to like and share and comment and make a note because guys, tomorrow at 12 noon Eastern Standard Time, we've got another story on 30 stories in 30 days at PTSD and Beyond.